too late by that point.
Yeah. Very nice guy, though.
He's a lovely bloke. You know. I was Five Live's correspondent, as we put it. That was it, wasn't it?
Thank you for your phishing text.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to keep this going, actually, because it's turned into quite a good thing.
It has.
And yeah, Five Live had Dirty Tackle was one phishing show, and also Fish on Five presented by Nick Hancock.
Oh, that was
as you suggested.
I knew he did one. Okay. Yeah.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And here are the headlines at 9 o'clock. Israel has struck dozens of Hezbollah targets in Lebanon over the last few hours after killing the group's longtime leader, Hassan Nasrallah. Lebanon's health ministry says 33 people were killed and nearly 200 wounded in yesterday's strikes. Jim Muir was the BBC's Middle East correspondent and now lives in Beirut.
So far, although the fact that so many of their leaders have been wiped out in the last couple of weeks, they're still firing rockets into Israel now, albeit at a somewhat reduced rate. But they do seem to have a flexible leadership system that allows understudies, as it were, to step in the moment somebody's killed. And, they almost expect to be killed.
Well, Jane Kinnamont is from the European Leadership Network, and she's an expert on the Middle East.
Although many are afraid of all-out war, it may be that for the moment Hezbollah doesn't have that much capacity to strike back. And Iran is also weighing its options. Iran has been signalling for months that it doesn't want a war with Israel, and it certainly doesn't want a war with the US. So there is a scenario where Iran really stays out of this.
The MP Rosie Duffield has quit the Labour Party because of what she's called Sir Keir Starmer's cruel policies and hypocrisy over his acceptance of gifts. She will now sit as an independent. Downing Street hasn't commented. Here's our chief political correspondent, Henry Zeffman.
I can't think of an example of someone quitting a party so soon after a general election. It's less than 3 months. So I expect there'll be some calls for her to stand down and fight her seat in a by-election as an independent. I don't believe she will do that. And that means that she will be there in Parliament as an independent MP, probably for upwards of 4 years, setting out her own views now as an independent MP.
The Conservatives are gathering in Birmingham for their annual conference. The four contenders for the party leadership will each get a chance to make their pitch before Tory MPs decide which two will make it through to the final ballot.
Three people have been charged with murdering a man who was stabbed in Norwich last week. The body of Calvin Taylor, who was 19, was found in a flat last Saturday.
And SpaceX has launched its mission to bring back two astronauts stranded on the International Space Station since June. The Dragon capsule, which has two empty seats for Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams, lifted off from Cape Canaveral in Florida.
Good old Butch. Now, James, we were talking about Everton earlier on. Everton winning a football match.
Yes.
Oof, wow. Palace, not so much. Dwight McNeil. Now, he's a name that he got the second half double, didn't he, for Everton, getting their first Premier League win of the season. And he's been a bit under the radar, you know, because of the poor results. But that is 4 goals for him now.
Exactly.
This season. He's doing very well.
Exactly. And you just feel for those Everton fans, don't you? Because there's just been so much turmoil, so much going on. And actually, they are, look, again, early season, but you look at the Premier League table, they are well clear of some of those other teams who struggled early on. They've got new owners coming in as well. It's, yeah, must have been a rare feeling for Everton fans yesterday. And,
A good week on and off the pitch.
Exactly. How very cliche.
Yeah,
Dwight McNeil, by the way, is one of those names where if you had it in a news bulletin as somebody in, I don't know, rural Alabama who'd discovered a rare species of something and introduced it, the Clippers, you know, Dwight McNeil.
yes.
You know, that it would be one of those, wouldn't it? But, you know, he's not.
No.
Anyway, there we go. That isn't one of the many talking points that we have from the Premier League action yesterday. Liverpool are top, by the way. 2-1 win in the late game at Wolves. Mo Salah's penalty sealing all 3 points for Arne Slot's side. What a great start he's had. It might not be the rock and roll football that Jurgen Klopp provided, but it's pretty good stuff, isn't it, in terms of reading of the table. Cole Palmer, of course, with that 4 goals for Chelsea in the first half. It could have been way more as well, according to his manager Enzo Maresca. That is dominating many of the comment pages this morning, his wonderful performance. In today's Premier League action, we should just point out that Ipswich Town are at home to Aston Villa. That's at 2. And then Five Live's Premier League Sunday concludes with Manchester Manchester United taking on Tottenham at Old Trafford at 4:30. In the Scottish Premiership, champion Celtic wrapped up a 9th straight win in all competitions in style against St Johnstone, 6-0 it finished. In today's Scottish Premiership action, Rangers play Hibs at midday. You'll have updates of that in 5 Live Sport. In cricket, Lancashire have been relegated to Division 2 of cricket's county championship. Yorkshire went the other way. They've been promoted yesterday thanks to a bonus point. And in boxing, Terry Harper reignited her career by appointing the fellow Brit Rhiannon Dixon. That was in Sheffield to become a 3-weight world champion. More sport in a bit here on Sunday Breakfast.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live,
the voice of the UK.
Sunday Breakfast
with Eleanor Aldroyd and Chris Warburton.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Yes, good morning. We will look back and look forward in Premier League terms at some of the games yesterday and the games today as well in the next half hour. Also hoping that there will be more cricket. The final home action internationally of the cricket season today. And it's due to be England against Australia, series decider in that ODI series down in Bristol. But the weather doesn't look too clever, and I'll be real shame if that gets washed out, because it's been actually a really excellent series so far. Australia going 2-0 up. England fighting back brilliantly in the most recent games. But Atif Nawaz is going to be joining us to talk about that. And more fishing as well.
Yeah, well,
that's kind of been the unexpected hit of the morning.
It has. Well, we'll get to some of those texts. This is simply because Phil Foden's a big fishing fan. And we were just curious as to, you know, when you do it, why you do it, you know, sell it, ultimately. That's what it's all about. And we've had some lovely texts. Also, by the way, the MP Rosie Duffield, who is very much in the news this morning, quit the Labour Party. You heard in the news bulletin for the reasons why. Now sitting as an independent, she is going to be on Laura Kunzberg's programme. So we will turn around some of that interview and play some of that to you as well. And also, Philip Schofield... he is on this programme, which is going to air on, it's called Cast Away, it's a Channel 5 show. Yeah. He's stranded on an island off Madagascar for 10 days, and it's really the first time we've heard from him since he stepped down from This Morning after admitting to an affair with a younger employee. So it's the first time he's back on TV screens, so first time in more than a year. So there's some clips. And Caroline Frost, who you'll be familiar with if you listen to 5 Live as TV critic, she has watched a lot of that. And so she's going to tell us what exactly Philip Schofield has said about all of that, but also about what happens next in his life as well.
But let's talk about our top story this morning. Israel says it has struck dozens of Hezbollah targets in Lebanon over the last few hours after killing the group's longtime leader, Hassan Nasrallah. Lebanon's health ministry says 33 people were killed and nearly 200 wounded in yesterday's strikes. Hundreds of thousands of people have fled their homes since the attacks began.
Well, speaking from Beirut, our Middle East correspondent Hugo Bechega told us the latest from there.
Yesterday, the Houthis in Yemen fired another missile at Israel, and this was intercepted by the Israeli military. But this has been the fear here for almost a year, that more of these Iranian-backed groups across the region, not only Hezbollah here in Lebanon, but also the Houthis in Yemen, militias in Iraq and Syria, could join this fight against Israel. There haven't been signs yet of a more coordinated campaign against Israel, but I think, you know, those fears remain.
Well, that is Hugo Bechega in Beirut. John Donison, the BBC correspondent, is in Jerusalem, and he says the focus there now is on what might happen next.
Hezbollah has had much of its leadership decimated, but it still has a huge military arsenal and much more sophisticated long-range guided missiles that could inflict damage all over Israel. So I think there is a question of whether Hezbollah is going to use those, is capable of using them at the moment with such a decimated leadership. And then, of course, what is Iran going to do? Iran has vowed to seek vengeance for the death of Hassan Nasrallah, but does it want to get directly involved in a confrontation with Israel, something that it has kind of resisted doing over the past year?
Well, Sir Mark Lyle Grant is the former UK ambassador to the United Nations and former national security advisor as well. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Ellie.
How do you describe, really, the events of, well, I was going to say the last 24 hours, but actually the last 48 hours, really, because we've also seen Benjamin Netanyahu standing up in front of the UN General Assembly this week and giving a lengthy speech. Where do you think things stand currently in the Middle East?
Well, this is a very significant military success for Israel. Hassan Nasrallah has been leader of Hezbollah for 32 years. He's a big name, if you like, in Lebanon and in the wider Middle East. The Israelis tried to kill him during the last war they had with Hezbollah in 2006. And so his death will be very popular in Israel. And I don't think there's really anyone in the West who is going to mourn Hassan Nasrallah's death. But I think two questions are left, and one your correspondent mentioned, is what is Iran's reaction going to be? Because Iran's been quite quiet over the last couple of weeks when Hezbollah's been on the back foot and has been attacked. They're vowing revenge, but they've vowed revenge the last time when Ismail Haniyeh, the head of Hamas, was killed in Tehran in July, and they didn't do anything. Will they do something now or not? And then there's, I think, a longer-term question about the strategy that Israel has. Because Netanyahu has only set one war goal as far as Hezbollah is concerned, which is to return the displaced Israeli citizens to their homes in northern Israel along the Lebanese border. But it doesn't seem to me that that's likely to happen in the near future. So what sort of conditions are required for him to achieve that goal? Are we going to see a ground incursion? Are we going to now see some diplomacy? So I think it's not clear that Netanyahu has thought beyond the tactics of this military success to the longer-term strategy of how to secure the northern border.
The question of whether Netanyahu actually cares about what the UN think, I mean, what do you make of that? What do you believe that he thinks? Because, you know, he very much wanted to give this speech.
No, absolutely. And it was surprising in May, given what's going on, that he went to New York to give the speech, given that he was making the speech on Friday when most of the world leaders already left. So the audience, you know, many people had walked out anyway of the auditorium. But those who were left were essentially note takers and interns. They were very sort of junior diplomats. All the leaders had gone. But he wanted to give that very public sign of defiance. You know, many commentators thought maybe he's going to respond to the proposal for a ceasefire that the US and French and others had put forward, but absolutely not. Now, there's a long enmity between the United Nations system and Israel. They feel that the UN is very biased against them. And it's true that over two-thirds of the UN members, so two-thirds of the world's countries, have recognized the state of Palestine and are very critical of the state of Israel. So he went into the lion's den, if you like, and gave a very defiant message, which was a snub both to the international community, but particularly, of course, to President Biden, who's been trying to put together this ceasefire both in Gaza and now in the northern border for several months.
Just a very quick final word. You said that people were not going to be mourning the death, or people in the West were not going to be mourning the death of Hassan Nasrallah. We should say that, you know, Hezbollah is an organization which has created a vast amount of damage in that region, and Israel feel very much, and have felt for many years, very much under threat from Hezbollah.
No, absolutely. I mean, Hezbollah is a terrorist organization that's recognized by most Western countries, and Hassan Nasrallah has been the head of that organization. But it is more than a terrorist organization. It's a much more substantive organization than Hamas is or ever would be in Gaza, because it is part of the Lebanese state. They have a very prominent political role in the Lebanese government and in the Lebanese parliament. And so some people call it a state within a state in Lebanon. So it can't be expelled from Lebanon as the PLO were, you know, 30 years ago. It is going to be there, and it will survive this decapitation of its leader. But we shouldn't forget that it's a terrorist organization. And as I say, no one in the West is going to mourn the death of its leader.
Thank you very much, Sir Mark. Sir Mark Lyle-Grant, former UK ambassador to the United Nations.
Let's have a quick word with Libby, who is British and living in Lebanon at the moment. Hello, Libby.
Hi there. How are you?
Yeah, all right. Thanks for joining us. Am I right in thinking that you believe you heard the strike which killed Hassan Nasrallah on Friday?
Yep, absolutely, 100% did. It was the first time we heard anything from the southern suburbs up in the northeast of Beirut, which is where I live, and it was absolutely terrifying.
What is life in the city like at the moment?
Quiet. Again, where we are, it's quite far away from where all the, you know, action is, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. but it's like a ghost town. People have fled to the north. The shops are closed. You know, it's just a ground town.
Life's ground to a halt, ultimately. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you planning? Because as I say, you're British, and the call from the government has been, you know, get out while you can. Ultimately, what are you thinking?
Yeah, so there are very, very limited spaces on flights. So we've managed to book a flight to Cairo on Wednesday morning. We had one booked last Wednesday to Cairo in the evening, and that was cancelled. Mm. Yeah.
And they're still normal commercial flights operating at the moment, are they?
Yes, but there's only one airline that's running, and that's called Middle Eastern Airlines. Mm. So it's the only one you can really trust.
Right. Okay, well, the best of luck to you, and thanks for talking to us, Libby. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Take care of yourself. That's Libby. She's there in one part of Beirut, and she heard that strike, as you heard, that killed the former head of Hezbollah. Right, it's 15 minutes past nine, quarter past nine, in fact.
The Football Daily Podcast
on BBC Sounds.
I'm Joel Hart, and I'm here at Liverpool's training ground interviewing the great Alison Becker.
I have three kids. They like to be on the goal when they play with me.
Do you see talent?
Yeah, I can see a little bit, but I would love to have a striker in the family.
Alison is up from the back, and it comes. Oh, would you believe it?
In this club, I think we have this prophetic sentence, you never walk alone. It's always a reminder for me. The people are on my side.
On the Football Daily Podcast, you can hear the full interview as we talk all things goalkeeping and what it takes to be the number one at one of the world's biggest clubs.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Morning, it's Ellen Oldroyd and Chris Warburton. And we've had so much to talk about in terms of the Premier League, Ellie. I haven't mentioned what the heck is going on at Brentford at the moment. Turning up late, even by a minute, you don't want to do it because, you know, they are doing amazing. Things. The Bees, they've achieved the remarkable feat of scoring in the opening 40 seconds in each of their past three Premier League games. That's amazing, isn't it? So it began 14th of September. That was against Manchester City. Do you remember they got that early one? It was Wissa who netted after 22 seconds. And then Brian Mbeumo, he's been responsible for keeping it all going. He scored after 23 seconds against Spurs. And then yesterday, there they were. He was there again, 37 seconds against West Ham. And we've had a text from Nick, who's in Kingston, just down the way, isn't it? Hi, Alien Chris. I like this. I think most of the complaints about the Premier League would be solved if games all lasted 60 seconds. Rodri wouldn't complain about playing too much. Time wasting would just about disappear, as would bad refereeing and VAR. And Brentford would be top of the league. Yes. Come on, you Bees, he says. Love it, Nick.
Not remotely biased, Nick. Thank you very much indeed for that. Yeah, it was a fascinating day yesterday in the Premier League. A couple of big games to come today as well. Liverpool, though, stayed top of the table after a 2-1 win over Wolves. Mo Salah securing the win from the spot.
Mo Salah. The boos here ringing around Molyneux. But Salah backpedals to the edge of the penalty area, stands with his hands on his hips, Sam Johnstone on the line, left footed now, Salah sends Johnstone the wrong way, and Liverpool are back in front, 2-1 they lead, and Wolves just couldn't hold it level for long enough. Wolves 1, Liverpool 2.
And Chris, talking about Premier League history, Cole Palmer making more because he's the first ever player to score four goals in the first half of a match. Chelsea's game against Brighton finished 4-2, with the 22-year-old disappointed that he didn't score more.
Yeah, I just try to play every game best as I can and hopefully pull off performances like that today. Should have had five or six. Yeah, we got a lot more chances and I just took the...
Well, let's speak to Kiva O'Neill, who is football reporter for The Athletic. Hello, good morning. Hi, Kiva, can you hear me?
Yeah, all good. Hi, Anne.
Oh, there we go. Lovely to speak to you. Cole Palmer, first of all, we actually had a text earlier on saying it was a big mistake by Pep to let him go. I mean, 40 million quid sounded like quite a good deal at that point, but now, is he regretting it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you'd see the frustration for Pep Guardiola yesterday. Wouldn't he have loved someone like Cole Palmer playing for Man City? I think, you know, when you watch him last season, he met. You know, he was a name that a lot of people knew. Chelsea made, you know, that big money signing and people were like, you know, is he going to perform? Scores 22 goals. And then yesterday, you know, he said that himself could be five or six. And I absolutely love him in interviews as well. Like, his interview answers are always like really short to the point, but like almost like, you know, he doesn't need to say much more. And that's kind of how he plays as well. You know, scores a penalty, scores a free kick, scores one that was, you know, a little bit tricky. I had to think about it. First time finish, scored a goal that was offside, could have had another goal in the second half, and was really disappointed. I think like punched the ball because he knows how good he is.
I mean, that is incredible, isn't it? Then there was a comparison, I think, on Match of the Day, Theo Walcott saying that he was comparing him to people like Dennis Bergkamp, Robin van Persie. And then Cole Palmer said, yeah, don't remember them, too young. And you just think, oh, good Lord, give us a break. But I mean, can he be that good, do you think?
I mean, he's already showing it, isn't he? You know, last season and this season, maybe this season's been a bit of a slower start for him, but he's got 6 goals now. And he's one of those players, I think I said it before the season, that I think he will finish as, you know, runner-up to the Golden Boot, to Haaland, who obviously didn't score yesterday, but will score plenty throughout the season. And I think that because, you know, there's going to be games like this and, you know, Chelsea completely figured out Brighton's high line and played a really good game against it. We're just in behind constantly. I think Cole Palmer just, yeah, he's just, he is cold, you know, his celebration is, everything about him is just, you know, he's just got this confidence that I think it was the penalty last season, wasn't it, against Man City, and it was kind of a moment of, you know, late on in the game, and it was like, okay, you know, he means business, and he's just, he doesn't seem to be fazed by anything.
Absolutely. Well, he's giving Chelsea something to really celebrate and enjoy. As far as Man City are concerned, though, dropping points for the second week in a row.
Yeah, not what they want. I mean, a difficult place to go in a 12:30 kickoff. Newcastle really don't like letting anyone win at St James's Park unless it's themselves, obviously. So, yeah, thoughts that, you know, you kind of imagined that City would have got something out of this, but, you know, now missing Rodri, and you kind of think, you know, how much will that impact them this season? Because that's been the worry since last week, and obviously how he's been ruled out. I think it's such a big injury for them in terms of just the control and everything he gives for Man City. So, yeah, I think Newcastle as well, credit to them, played a really good game, Anthony Gordon getting the penalty and then obviously scoring it himself. You know, we mentioned Cole Palmer. Gordon has got that energy as well, you know, to like really take sort of leadership role at such a young age, at such a big club.
Liverpool back on top as well. I mean, actually, again, that's... something, you know, that it is early to, it's early days in the season, it's early to know, but that is going pretty well at the moment for Liverpool. Although, you know, maybe not getting too overexcited on his slot. He seems to be a man who's got his head screwed on.
Yeah, he's pretty chilled, isn't he? Which I do like about him. And I think, you know, that sort of speaks to his style of play as well. It is a lot more patience than Jürgen Klopp's approach. You know, Liverpool are a little bit slower in the build-up and, you know, will pass the ball around a little bit more, it feels, and, you know, wait for that opportunity rather than go all in. So, you know, that's been a bit of a difference to the style of play. But you say that patience, there was a little bit of impatience yesterday and Liverpool could feel lucky to have, you know, got out of Wolverhampton with the win in the end, because it just felt like anything could sort of happen in that game. But then Wolves, you know, didn't really maybe, you know, do well enough, and towards the end of the game where Liverpool, you know, had that little bit of jeopardy about them, were able to sort of get through that period, and then, you know, Konate gets his headed goal for Liverpool, but then makes a massive mistake and just sort of, you know, not shielding the ball out well enough, just kick it out. And then, you know, him and Liverpool's new look goalkeeper, Alisson, who is unrecognisable without his beard, having a little bit of a moment.
and we've got high-flying Aston Villa at Ipswich at 2 o'clock, Villa in fifth at the moment. But then Tottenham against Manchester United. I mean, you know, 10th against 11th. It's been pretty poor so far for those two. But, I mean, United back at Old Trafford. Again, the disappointment in the Europa League in midweek. We heard from a couple of fans of both of those sides earlier on. And, I mean, they need to kickstart their seasons, both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at the table and Tottenham are 10th, Man United 11th after 5 games played, you know, you're kind of like on 7 points. The fans will feel like, you know, this is just such a massive opportunity for either team, and for all of us neutrals watching this, I mean, could you pick a better 4:30 kickoff on a Sunday, because it's going to be great entertainment, you know, whatever happens, and there's so much on the line. I think to get that win for either team will be really big going forward, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Kiva, for talking to us this morning. Kiva O'Neill of The Athletic, mm-hmm. talking about the Premier League, everything to do with it.
I miss Alison's beard, I have to say. It was a good one. Phil Foden, we've been talking about the fact he loves fishing, and he was in this fishing vlog on YouTube, Spooners is called, fishing pro Neil Spooner and his son Freddie. They went on a camping trip, and Phil Foden showed off his custom fishing rods engraved with Foden 47. That is it's good attention to detail, isn't it? And he landed a 28-pound carp, apparently. He loves it. He's done it from when he was a kid, and he loves the peace and solitude of it. So we were just asking, and you never know with the things that we just ask you to text in on as to what we're going to get. Initially, when we first started talking about this, it was just people saying, well, we love the peace and solitude. I thought we're just going to get repetition of that, which would have kind of been okay. But then it's been so much more than that, actually, which is always great to see. This is one from Keith, who says, hi there. I found angling to be a huge influence on my life. It helped me resolve some issues, and I met my husband Richard through fishing. Now feel life is complete. We have also met several well-known people on the riverside too. We love the show. Well, thank you. We love getting in touch.
Are you protecting the privacy of these people, Keith? Because I want to know who these well-known people are now.
Very good point. But it's, you know, it does feel like something, given that we quite often going on about it being Britain's most popular pastime, Britain's most participation sport. I don't really feel like we talk about it that much on the radio,
but
do we?
I wonder whether actually there are people sitting on riverbanks now or by lakesides. There will be listening to
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Because I just thought when you put this out there, you thought, you know, peace and tranquility. What you don't want is the two of us wittering in your ears.
But maybe
you are listening. Susan in Carlisle, morning. When I was 11 years old, I won a fishing competition. Oof. I was the only girl in the competition. I made my dad very proud.
Lovely stuff. Kim, who says, angling's got so many benefits. An important one is having people on the water for hours on end, watching, smelling, monitoring our once wonderful rivers. Humans watching what the water companies and other polluters are up to, says Kim. 99% of anglers care so much for their immediate environment and biodiversity. Okay. Oh, yeah. And Shazida, who sent us a photo. I couldn't quite work out what you were doing, but it looked involved. I always loved fishing as a child, growing up in Guyana. I just came back from Croatia where I caught a tuna. They're whoppers, aren't they, tuna?
Sometimes we just kind of, I like to think that we know our audience.
Mm-hmm.
I had a sense that there would be some fisher people out there.
Fisher folk. Is that it? 85058, right? Just sum it up for you. Why is it one of life's joys? Let's speak to another one of life's joys. Colin Murray. Morning, Colin.
It's alone time, isn't it? It's peace and quiet, which we all crave, slowing the clock down. So the mental health benefits of fishing, of angling, massive, really important.
You ever done it?
I've done a wee bit. I used to fish with Bobby George, you know. The darter. Mm. He has three lakes at his house that you just go and fish.
Different fish in each lake.
I don't know what the price is. My expertise stops quite short of that, of the type of fish. I think it's all the same. He's going to be listening. He's going to say it's not. No, it's a couple of different types of thing. But he like literally will come down and help out a lot of kids who have maybe just bought their first rod. And, which is a bit bizarre, you know, Bobby George come down helping you out. It's quite affordable as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
very good.
Just one more thing before I tell you it's on the show, just very quickly. Mm-hmm. I have this thing where I love when I hear a line in radio and think, imagine if you just turned the radio on for that line and you missed the context. You ever get that?
It's a bit of a
radio nerd thing. You just had one of the like all time greatest, which if I had about 3 minutes and 48 seconds ago went, just going to see what's on Weekend Breakfast. Let me just put it on. Click. I miss Alison's beard, I have to say. Anyway, moving on to the text.
I know, I did. Actually, I did a double take there as well.
Alison who? Yeah, love it.
It's brilliant. Yeah. It's brilliant. So on the show today, we got the Great Football Songbook Part 7, which we're already sort of planning ahead to Part 70 because we're just loving it. And I just love when a feature just really hits home as this is. And this is investigating why a club has a particular anthem in the origins. Last week was Goodnight Irene and Bristol Rovers. This week is I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles, which I have forever had my mind changed about. Now we've looked into when it made its way under the terraces, why it made its way under the terraces, And actually looking at the lyrics of it, it's sensational. So Pat Nevin and I joined by Martin Kellner, and it's the Hammers today on that. We're going to really get inside what it's like to be an Ipswich Town fan this season by talking to two people who've made their livings writing about them and supporting them their whole lives through different generations. One going all the way back to when we knew them as just being a top tier team. That's what they were. To another who's sort of came in as a young lad through the leaner times. So that's going to be really, really good fun as well. We'll also preview the big game as you guys have just been doing, Manchester United against Spurs. Looking forward to that. Megan Wynn, who played for Spurs and of course is out now playing for Perth, is getting up. I don't know what she's doing. What time would it be in?
Over there.
She's staying up late for us. Yeah, thank you.
That would be it, wouldn't it?
And Justin Moorhouse is just up. He's just up. Yeah, he's in Manchester. So he'd be going to the game. He'd be talking to as well. And our time machine is going back to this day, this weekend, in 2012, which is Alistair Bruce Ball joining us to relive the miracle at Medina, the Ryder Cup.
It's the anniversary of that
this weekend. Nuts, isn't it?
I know.
Let me just quickly read you this one. Morning. I am travelling to Grafham Water to run the England Youth Fly Fishing National Final. In five simple words to explain the passion, the tug is the drug. Imagine if you turn on the radio just at that point.
Wow, I'm not putting that in a bumper sticker, no offence to any fly fishers out there. I'm not sure J.R. Hartley's approving of that. He's a little bit modern for me.
More memorable title, isn't it?
Right.
Brilliant. Lovely stuff.
Brilliant.
Cheers,
Colin.
All
the morning to be listening to Five Live, I have to say.
Right, see you at 10 o'clock. Cheers. Right, it's 9:30. Let's get the news headlines.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And here are the headlines. Israel has continued to bombard targets in Lebanon after killing Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah yesterday. The military says it struck dozens of sites overnight. Lebanese media have reported at least 15 deaths in the latest attacks.
MP Rosie Duffield has quit the Labour Party because of what she called Sir Keir Starmer's cruel policies and hypocrisy over his acceptance of gifts. She will now sit as an independent.
Torrential rain from Storm Helene has ravaged parts of North Carolina and Tennessee, the latest US states to suffer in a disaster that has killed at least 63 people. In North Carolina, the mountain city of Asheville was largely cut off by flooding.
And the Conservative Party's annual conference starts today in Birmingham. The event is a chance for the party's four leadership candidates to make an impression, with each of them due to give a speech on Wednesday. They get 20 minutes each, actually, and so that could be a big moment for who ends up being the next leader of the Tories.
Yeah, although we're not going to know that till November.
Yeah, that's true.
Because, you know, everyone's got to vote for them at
that
point.
It goes on a while,
It does go on for a while. Yeah. Anyway, James Gregg has got the sport this morning.
Good morning.
And, what can you say about the Premier League? It's great.
I thought you were going to start with fishing, actually.
We could do that.
Do you remember Fishermania? It used to be on Sky. Do you remember that? That was like a Barry Hearn brainchild.
Yes, that sounds very Barry Hearn.
It was like a what?
Barry Hearn brainchild.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was kind of like a fishing, because I mean, he's tried to bring different sports to different people.
Oh, like more razzmatazz kind of thing.
Yeah, it was. It was quite exciting, actually. And I think it definitely drove quite a few people, including a lot of footballers, actually, to trying it. So
maybe that's where Phil Foden got the idea.
I always remember growing up, there's John Wilson was the guy who was the most enthusiastic. I was not into fishing, but he was the most enthusiastic bloke, and he always used to pick up the fish and go, "Oh, look at the size of that fish!" And he just used to have this huge laugh, and he used to be wading around in the water. That's what I remember from.
I do remember on American holidays as well. You check into your hotel room and you flick through the channels, and there's loads of channels, but there's always tons of fishing channels. Oh,
you're
on American
television. That's true, actually. Good
like
point.
That texter earlier, he said there's fishing and then there's fishing, and that isn't true, isn't it?
Then there's fishing.
Yeah. Well, Robson Green, of course.
Sort of extreme fishing.
That was
it?
Good. I used to watch that with my dad a bit. That was really good, actually. Robson Green's extreme fishing. There you go. No fishing in this sports bulletin, I promise. We had a rip-roarer of a Premier League programme on Saturday. We now turn our attention to Sunday's action. Five Lives Premier League League Sunday starts with Ipswich hosting Aston Villa at 2. All eyes on the 20-year-old Colombian John Duran, who's been brilliant for Villa. 5 goals in all competitions so far this season. Unai Emery says that his form warrants starting minutes, although he's still trying to figure out, is Emery, a system that will allow him to play the Colombian alongside Ollie Watkins.
He's playing as like a impact beam very well, but playing like he played on Tuesday, 90 minutes, he played as well fantastic. It's my challenge as well to try to get the best of him, playing with Watkins as well.
Ipswich, one of 5 teams still searching for that first win in the Premier League this season, of course. Manchester United versus Tottenham at Old Trafford follows that match here on Five Lives Premier League Sunday later on. Both sides have had mixed starts to the season. Spurs 10th, United 11th. Rarely a week goes by without debate over the future of United manager Erik ten Hag. That speculation, as of course, hasn't really subsided following that somewhat underwhelming 1-1 draw with the Dutch side FC Twente in the Europa League. Ten Hag says that his side have one clear issue this season.
I'm not scoring goals enough. That's the problem. It's the key area to score more goals. As a team, I think we have players across the team who have the abilities to score. But that's clear. You see all the opportunities we are creating. We're not scoring enough.
Both Premier League clashes, like I say, in full with our full team from midday. Updates too from midday as Rangers will look to narrow the gap on Scottish Premiership leader Celtic. They face Hibernian at lunchtime. Their old firm rivals just keep on winning. They are a proper juggernaut this season. 6-0 they won away yesterday at St Johnstone, and they've now won all 6 league games this season, alongside Aberdeen, by the way, who they lead on goal difference. England's rugby union side will play the first match of the International Women's XV1 tournament later against the USA in Canada. Coach John Mitchell has been criticising the organisers, saying that his players don't deserve to play in front of non-crowds. Concerns, of course, are plenty around ticket sales for that tournament. Elsewhere, in terms of on-pitch matters, forward Alex Matthews has been named as captain for today's match. She says competition for places is pushing her side forward.
It is challenging, but I also think it's amazing. I think previously you sort of had your squad and it was stuck to that, but you know, Mitch isn't afraid if we see someone forming in the PWR, like bring them in. And I think that's just strength to the league and where the game's going. And it also keeps, you know, the players that have been here for a long time on our toes, and you just want to keep getting better, but also support the girls coming in because, yeah, it's all just challenging us and making us a better team.
Warrington Wolves will face Hull KR in the Super League playoff semi-finals after beating St Helens in a dramatic match last night. Mark Percival kicked Saints level in the very last second. It took the match to golden point extra time. There were obviously then a few tense minutes, but Wolves held their nerves with George Williams kicking them into the semi-finals with the golden point. It's the first time since 2018 that Warrington have won a playoff match. And in tennis, Jack Draper was looking to book a place in the semi-finals of the Japan Open. Britain's number one, though, has retired. He was a set down against Hugo Humbert of France, and therefore it'll be the Frenchman who plays in that final tomorrow in Tokyo. More on that and the rest of the sport throughout the morning here on BBC Radio 5 Live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Let's find out how the weather is looking. Here's Matt Taylor.
Good morning. Chilly start, gradually getting wetter and windier for some. Southwest England, Wales, Isle of Man and Northern Ireland. Seeing the thicker cloud arrive first, gales around coasts as well, 50-60 mile an hour gusts for 1 or 2, but outbreaks of rain erratically developing through the morning, afternoon, where it could turn heavy and persistent. Across the rest of England, away from the southwest, staying largely dry for a good part of the day, best of any brighter breaks in the east, fairly cloudy for most, but rain will develop through the evening and overnight. Scotland staying dry though for most through the day, as showers clear away from Orkney and Shetland. A lot of cloud around, but some brighter breaks here and there. Temperatures across the UK today, 11 to 15, but persistent rain across England tonight could cause some minor flooding. Matt Taylor, 5 Live Weather.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live,
the voice of the UK.
Sunday Breakfast
with Eleanor Oldroyd and Chris Warburton.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Good morning and welcome along if you're just joining us, if you're just getting yourself sorted out on a Sunday morning, coming up to 20 minutes to 10. The Conservative Party's annual conference starting today in Birmingham, mainly an event to find a new leader, of course. Our political correspondent Hannah Miller is there.
So this is going to be a pretty unusual conference because it is basically a giant hustings for the four of them. There are banners inside the conference centre with all the candidates' faces on them. I'm sitting here with a giant Robert Jenrick head to my left-hand side. So let's start with him. He is the candidate who's got the most MPs publicly backing him at the moment. And then we have Kemi Badenoch. She's a close second with MPs, a pretty strong contender, thought to be the favourite among the party's members who will get the final say. There's James Cleverly, the former Home Secretary, and also Tom Tugendhat, who's widely regarded as being kind of the most centre-ground of the candidates. All of them doing lots of events over the next few days, speeches, Q&A sessions. I'm sure there'll be a few conversations behind closed doors as well.
And the various things that they are standing for, I mean, Kemi Badenoch has done a piece or has written something in the Sunday Telegraph today saying not all cultures are equally valid when it comes to immigration.
Yeah, Kemi Badenoch is calling for an immigration and an integration strategy. Her language on it, as you say, is pretty strong. She says some people have customs which may be at odds with British values. Kemi Badenoch was born in the UK. She grew up in Nigeria before she came back to the UK on her own when she was 16. And she says in her article that it would be naive to assume that immigrants automatically abandon what she calls ancestral ethnic hostilities at the border. She talks particularly about being struck by what she says is the number of recent immigrants to the UK who hate Israel. Now, that is pretty strong language. A lot of people might disagree with what she's saying there, but she is someone who is known for taking a stance on particular issues and sort of saying what she really thinks, and that is clearly what she's doing in this article this morning.
Well, I'm sure we'll hear a lot more from the views of the other candidates over the next few days. When are we going to find out who the new leader will be?
After all of this, not actually until early November. So what's going to happen is there'll be all four of them strutting the stuff over the next few days. MPs, members get to have their say, ask them questions. There are even these post boxes around saying, ask a candidate a question, where you can put a little leaflet in saying what you'd like them to answer. So it's been set up over the next few days to really kind of allow the leadership election to be front and centre and quite tightly gripped by the party. And then after the next 4 days, after their speeches on Wednesday, everyone will go back to Westminster. MPs will get a vote. They will eventually get it down to the final two. The final two then go out to Conservative Party members who decide who they actually want. And that, as I say, doesn't happen until early November.
And that was Hannah Miller in Birmingham. Five Lives Matt Chorley will be in Birmingham and he'll present his show from the Tory Party conference all next week. One of the leadership contenders, James Cleverly, will be on Five Live Breakfast tomorrow morning and we plan to speak to all of them in the coming days.
It's 9.42.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
You oh, no, that. It is 9.42. And I thought we were going into a trail thing, but we're not. And that's my doing. Sorry. In fact, what we're going to do is talk about Philip Schofield. Philip Schofield is going to be back on our television screens tomorrow. First time since stepping down from ITV's This Morning after admitting to an affair with a younger employee. The 62-year-old will appear on Channel 5's reality series Castaway, which sees him stranded on an island off Madagascar for 10 days. Now, in it, he discusses many, many things, including his sexuality.
I know that coming out for so many people is liberating and it's freedom on a plate. Absolutely be yourself, live your life to the absolute full. It's the saying, just live your best life. But for me, doing it later in life, at the moment, it's just given me more anguish than joy.
Philip Schofield also suggested this could be his last television appearance.
I'll be slammed for this. Philip Schofield, mad rant. But the thing is, I don't care anymore. I don't care. This is me having my say as I bow out.
Well, let's speak to TV critic Caroline Frost. Morning to you, Caroline.
Hello.
What do you make of the choice of show? Because he could have done a sit-down interview, you know, he could have done a kind of easier soft soap one, he could have done a, you know, take your pick of who would do the interview. But he's chosen this instead. What do you make of that?
Yes. So he did do a sit-down interview immediately after his exit from This Morning last year with Amal Rajan. But this is clearly his interview after time of reflection. I think the optics are very striking. The castaway, the sense of days in the wilderness, soul searching, soul bearing, as we've just heard. Mm. And the idea that sometimes people do need to completely get away from society, by which he feels so bruised, in order to reflect on his position in life. So it is a striking optic. As you say, he could have done many things, but I think it is done deliberately to make us feel that he is a very solitary person at the moment compared with the great coterie that used to surround him, all the glitter and the bright lights of a television studio. This is the opposite of that.
Yes. What else do we hear from him? I mean, that was a couple of clips, but what else does he say? Particularly, what does he say about his, you know, the time in the spotlight with everything that was going on with This Morning?
I mean, well, first of all, the idea that this is his last appearance on TV reminded me of when any big artist books Wembley Arena for one night only until it sells out, and then suddenly, miraculously, another date in the calendar becomes free. So we will take that with the requisite pinch of salt that we apply to everything in the TV industry. In terms of ITV, well, it's one of those, what do people call it in social circles? Passive aggression. So he said, there are so many people I could throw under the bus in return, but I'm not that kind of person. But the very act of telling the entire TV audience, the viewing public, that he's not that kind of person. So that's a little bit of a threat, but I mean, he's not. He just clearly wants to have his say. He still feels wronged 18 long months later. He said he's repeated the phrase that he did something unwise but not illegal. And I think that that is clearly a message to other people across the industry who've been accused of more heinous crimes. So in general, it's a big, very polished, deliberately unkempt, but deliberately so, pity party, I would say. And it may well work because people love this kind of thing. But whether he'll come back on the back of it, that's another question.
We hear from his family as well.
Yes, I mean, that's a strong message. And I think that's a very positive one, because clearly they haven't fought shy of saying that they were very shaken when he came out. I mean, the coming out was equally a polished affair. And of course, at his side then was Holly Willoughby. Big hugs from him, for her, for Eamon, from all these people he no longer speaks to, but the people who have stayed by his side. And I think this is, as much as anything, the most impressive part of this entire project for me is the strength of feeling and camaraderie and support that he still shares with his family. And they speak in the documentary as well. And they talk about what they've been through and that it's been very hard for them. Of course, they're just kind of collateral. This man chose to have a public life, but they didn't. And the fact that they are all still barbecuing together. And even then, though, there's a little bit of a thorn, because he turns around to them saying, are you okay? Are we okay? And clearly that's a barb against not just Holly Willoughby, but This Morning team in general.
Oh, that opening line after.
I think some grenades are still being gently thrown over the wall of the ITV studio.
Do I detect a little cynicism from you, Caroline?
I wish him well. You know, none of us like being shamed, and he was shamed on a huge, huge platform, and he fell from a great height. But, you know, I do think that these people are very lucky, the ones who get through the eye of the needle, who get to the salaries for sitting on a sofa and talking about aubergines. And really, I think that in this, you know, current economic crisis, I just think that Philip Schofield is suffering from first world problems, but they are problems and they are his. So I can only wish him well.
Caroline, thank you. That's television critic Caroline Frost. And that programme will start on tomorrow, I think, won't it? And it's called Castaway on Channel 5. It's 9:48 now.
On BBC iPlayer.
He's our dog.
We made a mistake.
Please, not anymore. He's not, mate. Wake up.
The new series of Colin from Accounts.
Do we even need a pet?
We've got other stuff in common.
Do we?
What is your favourite kind of music?
Bubble grunge.
What is that?
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
Now, the deciding one-day international between England and Australia takes place in Bristol today, or does it? Depends on the weather. Atif Nawaz is part of our commentary team, joins us now. Atif, I tell you what, I'll be so disappointed if the weather washes this out. Because, I mean, you will be as well, obviously, because it's been a really good series, this.
It has. It's been a really good sort of back and forth series. You know, Australia starting strong, England coming back, and, you know, two sort of very strong teams going toe to toe. And whilst the weather in Bristol, like the forecast is not very promising. Of course, they're not always right. And, you know, we wait and see how much cricket we get in. There was some discussion about sort of potentially playing a shortened game like they did with the, you know, the 50 over the One Day Cup final on Monday. But they've, it's been announced that playing conditions won't allow them to shorten the game. So it's going to be, you know, they're going to attempt a 50 over game. Whether they get the whole thing in looks unlikely. It's still quite gloomy here right now as well. I think we're expecting rain at about 2 o'clock. It's possible it misses the ground, but well, it could just be one of those very frustrating to all situations that we never get resolved.
Yeah, look, let's be positive. It was absolutely chucking it down in Durham a couple of days ago, and they got a full game in, and it was pretty horrible at Lords as well before they managed to play a 39-over game the other night. And England have fought their way back brilliantly, bearing in mind how heavily they were beaten at Trent Bridge and Headingley.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was very important for sort of Harry Brooke, who's the stand-in captain for this series. You know, he was sort of roundly criticised for his comments after the first game, sort of suggesting that, you know, they weren't taking responsibility or what have you. This is the way it was taken by some of the media. But, you know, the performances he himself has put in the last couple of games to help England to very strong positions. Also sort of Liam Livingston coming back into form, demonstrating that really intense power-hitting ability. And he scored 28 runs off the last over in the previous game at Lords, which I think is the most amount of runs scored in an international white ball game, in an over of an international white ball game at Lords. So, you know, there is a lot of spectacular cricket being played by this England side. They really are box office. It's quite telling that even in a very cold September, they're still drawing full houses across the country. So, you know, fingers crossed they can get on the pitch today and keep entertaining.
And this is an England team pretty much, well, a certain amount of transition, a few people rested. So Joe Root obviously rested ahead of the test series against Pakistan, which starts on, what, a week on Monday, is it? 7th of October? It's really
right.
Soon, isn't it? And Harry Brooke presumably is going to be is part of that squad as well. So the season never really ends, does it? But also they're looking further ahead to another visit to Pakistan, hopefully early next year for the Champions Trophy. So that is the next 50-over focus really for the team.
It is indeed, and that's kind of what, you know, Australia and England have been looking to do with the series is get some time in, because obviously, you know, the Australian summer, they're going to be very focused on test cricket. England have this tour to Pakistan. It's going to be quite intense, you know, three sort of almost back-to-back test matches. So this is like a rare opportunity to get some 50-over cricket in. The conditions have been a bit challenging. We've noticed a lot of swing and seam movement, early doors for bowlers, as you'd sort of expect in September in England. But, you know, the thinking is that that'll prepare you for anything you're going to go face out there in Pakistan, where you don't usually get as much assistance as we have been seeing here recently for bowlers anyway. So it is a big tournament. You know, this England camp, they're very keen to win trophies. You know, Brendan McCullum as the new sort of white ball coach to go alongside his red ball credentials. Like, he is very keen to win trophies, and the Champions Trophy will be their first white ball target.
Absolutely, and lots to look forward to as well. Champions Trophy, you'll be able to hear that on Test Match Special. Lots of coverage of the Pakistan series as well coming up. And England's women are about to start a T20 World Cup as well. So it never really stops, I think it would be fair to say. I know that the team, I'm staying in this country. A few people are heading off to different corners of the world. The T20 World Cup starting next weekend.
Brilliant. Listen, England have got a very good shot.
Absolutely. Listen, Atif, thank you very much indeed. Atif Nawaz down in Bristol. Hopefully there'll be ball by ball commentary from the TMS team on Five Sports Extra from 10:45. They will be there for you, whatever happens.
Absolutely.
It's 9:53.
Now, the Kent MP, Rosie Duffield, has resigned from the Labour Party because of what she called Sir Keir Starmer's cruel policies. She told the BBC's Laura Kunzberg she was profoundly disappointed by the Prime Minister.
I'm ashamed of the fact that we stood up rightly and condemned all of the, you know, the last few years of Tory, what we saw as Tory sleaze, and all of the things that, you know, brought politics into disrepute. And we've always held ourselves up as this, you know, a party that's better, that will do better, that will clear out the rot. And here we are, and it's daily revelations of hypocrisy and grubby kind of presence and things. I mean, I can't believe what I'm reading every single day.
Well, the Cabinet Minister, Pat McFadden, has responded to Rosie Duffield's comments on Laura Koonsberg's show in the last few minutes on BBC One.
When I, you know, read Rosie's letter last night and listening to the interview there, I think you can see that she's been disillusioned with the party leader, with the party maybe more generally, for quite a long time. I don't think this is something that's just developed in the last few months. I'm disappointed to see her go. I like Rosie. But ultimately, I'm not surprised at the decision that she's made.
And you can read more on that story on the BBC News website right now.
OK, so Colin's going to be with you in 5 minutes' time. Stay with us on Five Live for that. We're going to finish by talking about fishing, because we've been talking about it through the programme. Wasn't really expecting to be talking about it on and off for 3 hours, but we have, because we've had so many terrific texts from you. This is because there was a thing about Phil Foden. He was on a fishing vlog on YouTube. He's mad about fishing, basically, even to the point where he's got custom fishing rods engraved with Foden 47, the shirt number he's always had at City. Sort of thing you can do when you're a top flight footballer, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So look, a couple of your texts. This one's from Charlie. Morning. Brilliant, you're talking about fishing, especially as I'm sat here on a 608-mile journey back from the north of Scotland to Gloucestershire. It's my annual pilgrimage of a week's salmon fishing up north, and despite the exhausting journeys to and from, enjoyment, peace, general good crack with like-minded individuals is something I wouldn't miss for the world.
Yeah, and this is from Alan, who says, for my late dad, the fishing was secondary to trying to blend into the countryside and admire its beauty. That was the pleasure on most weekends. Lots of love to my dad, Clive.
Mm-hmm.
That's from Alan Smith.
Lovely. And another listener saying, I've recently started pike fishing again after a break of 20 years. I was out yesterday, saw a kingfisher and skeins of pink feet geese flying up the Humber. Doesn't matter if you catch a fish or not, it's just nice to be out.
We've created some lovely images this morning.
We have, it's been really beautiful. And let's get another one from Craig, who's in Rutland. Got in touch with us earlier on. Hang on a minute, Craig, are you the tug is the drug guy?
I am, yes. The tug is the drug, all right.
Well, you made us laugh earlier, mate, yeah, I have to say. What are you doing there?
Why, I'm current manager of the England Youth Fly Fishing Team, and today we're actually out on the water as we speak. They're just having their first cast of the morning for the 2024 English Youth Fly Fishing National Final. The top three are qualifying for a place in the 2025 England team, fishing against Ireland, Scotland and Wales in Scotland next year. So it's full-on heat on today. I've just seen the first fish get netted on a boat over there.
Wow.
So someone's off the mark very quick.
Okay. Well, actually, right, do what we try and do when we're out and about, okay? You are the eyes and ears of our listeners for us this morning, Craig. Explain what you can see in front of us at beautiful Grafham Water.
Well, unfortunately, I can see a couple of paddle boarders, which isn't ideal, but it's the perfect wind. It's overcast. There's a light ripple. And the water's looking in mint condition for fly fishing. Overcast is key and a light wind is key. And that's exactly what we've got here at Grafham Water near Huntingdon today. So conditions are great.
That's good. You probably sounded like a reporter there. That was excellent, Craig. Now, are you there? Did someone tell me you're there with your boys as well?
Well, I'm not my boys. It's the England youth fly fishermen. Fly fishing boys have turned up today to try and get into the place for the 2025 England team.
Yes.
So I'm currently out on a boat with two of them as we speak. So
hang on, you're on the boat.
I'm on the boat, bobbing up and down in the middle of Grafham Water with two young lads either side of me, desperately trying to get into the England team.
This is fantastic. We're right in the thick of the action, aren't we? What is the sort of aim? You know, what does success look like for those guys today?
Well, today they're fishing for 12 fish.
Right.
12 trout, rainbow trout, brown trout. They're fishing for 12. They've got to take the first couple in to weigh on the scales to differentiate, hopefully first, second, and third place with the weight difference, and they're releasing the other remaining 10 fish.
Mm, okay. And for those of us who had never done it, I don't mean at that level. I mean just in general. Yep. And I'm one of those. Yep. You can count me in there, Craig. What is it?
Yeah.
What is it? What's the beauty?
Well, as I've heard many of your messages on the way up, driving down the A1 this morning, it's the tranquility, the beauty. I myself go salmon fishing up in Scotland, and you're just away from the world. Your head switches off. I work for myself in the fly business, bizarrely enough, and to get away, your mind just switches off from it. You're fly fishing, just focusing totally on the fish. Any issues in the world that are going on around you, they just disappear. They eliminate while you're focusing and concentrating on fishing. It's amazing. It really is.
Brilliant.
To get away from the stresses of today's life, fishing is the way forward in my eyes.
You're in a great place for it there today, aren't you? You really are. I've been up there, and it's a wonderful little spot. So have a great day. Good luck to all of those lads.
You.
And you've given us probably biggest laugh of the day today. the tug is the drug.
It is the drug. I did wonder, but hey-ho, that's what we say.
Got a hook on me. That's the other part of the lyric, isn't it, in a way? But anyway, right, Craig, thank you very much. Craig there from Rutland, who's up in Grafham Water.
Really enjoyed all your texts this morning, and thank you so much for listening. You'll be able to hear both Coventry games this afternoon. Ipswich Villa and Man United Tottenham. So that will be on 5 Live Premier League Sunday. Colin Murray is next, and I'm off on holiday, but I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Oh, I'll see you then. Okay, yeah, have a good one, and thanks for listening this morning.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
With the BBC News on 5 Live, I'm Giuliano Cazaday. Israel has continued to bombard targets in Lebanon after killing Hezbollah's leader Hassan Nasrallah. The military says it's hit dozens of sites overnight, including rocket launchers and places where weapons are stored. Lebanese media are reporting at least 15 deaths in the latest attacks. Our correspondent, John Donison, is in Jerusalem.
I think Israel feels that it has the boot on the throat of Hezbollah at the moment. It's inflicted huge damage on their leadership over the past few weeks, and there have been renewed airstrikes by Israel in Lebanon overnight. Now, I guess the ball is really in the court of Hezbollah and its backer Iran at the moment.
Police are investigating the death of an 8-year-old boy in Cumbria after an incident involving a firearm. Emergency services were called to a farm in the Walkop area, and the boy was taken to hospital with life-threatening injuries to his head and face. A man in his 60s has been arrested on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter. The MP, Rosie Duffield, has quit the Labour Party because of what she's called Keir Starmer's cruel policies and hypocrisy over accepting gifts. She'll now sit as an independent. Downing Street is yet to comment. The Conservatives are gathering in Birmingham for their annual conference. The four contenders for the party leadership will each get a chance to make their pitch before Tory MPs decide which two will make it through to the final ballot. Speaking on Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, Robert Jenrick pledged to take action to reduce the number of people coming to the UK illegally.
There is no way that we will fix this merely by tinkering around the edges, improving the Home Office, changing processes. I've done those things. Mm. Trust me. I've thought about this in great depth. We will never secure our borders. We will never get dangerous criminals and terrorists out of our country unless we leave the European Convention on Human Rights.
A yellow weather warning has been issued for heavy wind and rain across parts of Wales and England with a risk of flooding. It's after heavy rain caused disruption last week. Dan Willis is a farmer in Berkshire.